This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's June 19th, 2019. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch.
Hey there.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and are listening live, you can call us right now at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to this on podcast, you can send an email also to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can also visit and comment on Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Starting out with Ron's Rant of the Week. Okay, this one I picked up yesterday while on a journey to New York in a motorized vehicle, unfortunately. But where's my bike lane? Route 44 in Bolton, access to the bike lane and to the Charter Oak Trail and the Hop River Trail. I saw a commuter cyclist with panniers on and lights flashing, riding on the shoulder along, what is that? That's what's that, 384? What is that up there? Yeah. And he's riding along on the shoulder and, you know, no protection and, you know, I mean, good for him. I know who it was, actually. It was Jim of our friends, Jim and Sylvia, who are doing a lot to make that problem go away. And he was riding into work, and he does that every day. But there's no bike lane there. Yo, DOT, if you're listening, and I know you don't because you probably don't like me, but that's okay. If you are listening, how about some sheros on the road or something? Something to, like, let people know that there might be cyclists there just for, you know, like a quarter of a mile. That's all we're looking at. Anyway. Do you have a critical intersection or a section of road that needs attention in your town? What are you doing about it in your community? Yes, I'm asking for advocacy here. Step out, make noise, make it happen. Further discussion on the show and on my Facebook page, Bicycle Talk. Let us know how you feel about this. On a positive side, we are in Connecticut, and our state flower is in full bloom. And if you don't know what the state flower is in the state of Connecticut, if you've lived here for a long time, it is the mountain laurel. Okay, I'll let it out. The mountain laurel is in full bloom right now, and it's about to end this weekend, and it's amazing what it looks like. There's something called a mountain laurel preserve, and it's up in Union, Connecticut. If you have never gone there and checked it out, you need to go check this thing out. It is so cool. It's beautiful. Those bushes are 12 to 16 feet tall. They're huge. And it's, like I said, it's in full bloom, and it's on a dirt road, one of my favorites. Love dirt roads. We're actually planning a ride this weekend, and we are going up there on Saturday. We have three different rides going up to the Mount Laurel Preserve, so very, very nice. Get out and check it out. And the other thing on a positive side, how about the wild roses? God, well, you guys been out on the road. You smell the wild roses out your way, or are you too far deep into the city to smell that?
I smell a lot of diesel exhaust.
No.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this later on. I need to bring you out here. Jeremy, you know this.
I smell the flowers.
Yeah, you know the flowers.
I have whole stories about springtime and early summer smell of flowers and cycling.
Absolutely. Sure. We'll get there. Anyway, last thing on my list, the maintenance minute. And then I'll introduce you to the voices that are out that are in the studio here with me. It's June, okay? You're halfway into your cycling season, probably somewhere around there. You've been riding your bike for a while. Checking your tires. This is kind of important. Take a look at your tires. I examine our tires every time we go for a long bike ride. I always check our tires out. If you're getting ready to race and on the weekend you want to check your racing tires, make sure there aren't any cuts or cracks or anything on the tire that could cause you a catastrophic failure while riding your bike. So that's I think Jeremy is going to relate a story to us later on about this, but we'll go back to that in a second. How to know when you need new tires on your road bike. Look out for, you know, look for the little nicks and the gouges, and you know, there's a lot of debris on the road, and the debris will cut your tires, will damage your tires. You got to be careful of that sort of thing. I've even found pieces of glass that are embedded in the tire that haven't made their way through yet, and fortunately I got to them before they got to me, so I avoided a flat tire. You want to check for grooves. You want to check for cracking of the sidewalls. You want to just take a really good look. Visible threads or casing. I have a good story on that too, but I'll save that one for another time from back in the bicycle shop days. Things you also want to look at is if you're riding tubular tires, you're one of those old curmudgeons like me and you still have a few sets of tubular wheels kicking around, you want to make sure that your tubulars are well adhered to the rim. Just give them the thumb test. Bring them down, you know, bring them down around 10, 15 pounds and just push your thumbs up against them and make sure that they're not just falling off the rim or that the rim tape is separating from the tire itself. These are all things to watch out for. So check your tires. It's the middle of the summer. Check your tires. See what kind of condition they're in so you can go out and have a ride and not have any problems. We're going to bring it on to our special guest today. Our special guest. I love it when we have guests on the show. My special guests today are Jed Kornbluh and Jeremy Brazil, the creators of the cycling podcast Marginal Groans. Yeah, like it. So the sordid beginnings of this podcast grew out of a conversation they had back in 2018 while riding in a... that's what it says here.
It says 2018.
It does. You should check that. It's probably on your blog post. It's supposed to be 2008 probably, right?
No.
15 or 16.
15 or 16. Okay, yeah. While riding in a van of smelly cyclists on our way back from an event. See what happens when you don't proofread your...
Anyway. Oh, we do proofread. We just miss stuff, obviously.
But I didn't either. But anyway, I didn't know. So you guys realized that aside from social media, that there was a lack of decent creative space to discuss all the things related to New England cycling and local bike racing. So silly bike racing stories, yeah, we've all got those. So you decided to get a microphone, download some software, spend some time recording yourselves and talking about the one thing that you can't live without, bicycle racing. So here I am introducing Jeremy and Jed, and Kieran is not here, but apparently is very involved with this, too, in producing your show.
Yes, that
and
is correct.
This is Welcome Marginal Groans, a cycling podcast to Bicycle Talk.
Oh.
How about that?
Thanks.
There it is.
We're
I love
happy
it.
To be here,
I
yeah.
love it. I
Thanks
love
for
it.
Having
That's great.
Us for
well,
sure.
You know, this is going to be fun because, you know, no one likes to talk bicycles more than I do. I love
That's
throwing
right.
bikes, and it's fun. And obviously, we have some history on that, but we'll get to that. But before we get there, we're going to start with the early, early history. And Jed, tell me about your first experience that you can remember riding a bicycle.
I can remember riding on a tandem behind my mother
I
was 3.5 or 4. And
Mom.
I don't know if I remember this because of the photo or because of the maybe the image that I've created around that photo.
What a great image.
Yeah, we're riding downtown in Vineland, New Jersey, where I grew up, and
wow.
It was part of a family group ride that my parents.
That's
led.
Down south by the Pine Barrens, by the way.
That's yes. I'm not. I am not a Piney, though. I am maybe 10 miles west of being considered a Piney.
Guess who grew up in New
Jersey? But you could go ride in the Pine Barrens. It's all
true.
Nice and flat, and they have awesome roads down there.
Oh, it's great.
You
would love the dirt road riding down there. It's
yeah.
tremendous.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't done.
Well, there.
I grew up in East Windsor, Heightstown.
Oh,
which is
I know right where that is.
Yeah, right. So yeah. It's a little bit north, and so from there, you're already in the flat part of New Jersey,
right.
And you have access to the beginnings of the Pine Barrens. So like in Allentown and Jackson, you can ride out that way from there.
Sure. Before I moved to Connecticut, I lived in Hopewell, just north of Princeton. So
yeah, but that's hilly.
That's very hilly.
Yeah. Then you're getting into the Sourlands.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
It never ends here. Whenever New Jersey comes up, I mean,
well,
you can take the girl out of New Jersey.
That's true. That's
right.
true. That's true.
I'm just a Jersey girl living in a Connecticut world.
What a great memory! You can. So your parents rode bikes,
and they still do. My parents have a
Bravo.
They have a tandem bike shop in South Jersey called Tandems East.
No
way! What town?
In Pittsgrove, just outside of Vineland.
Right.
Yeah, they started the shop in
how long ago did they start that shop?
87.
So they've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Is this the famous New Jersey Tandem store? There's one down there
that's my parents. So
that's your parents.
This
no
store
kidding.
This store's based in their house. I grew up. I literally grew up in a bike shop. It was in our basement. My job after school was prepping bikes to be sold. So I would do
Aww.
Box builds for my dad. Back
oh,
when Burley
man.
Was his major brand,
yeah.
I had to complete 3 bikes a day.
Do you know my friend John?
You were the Sunday morning boy.
I was. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's great. What a great story.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice. Jeremy, Tell me.
I don't know if I can top that.
Oh, well, that's all right. You can shoot for it. You don't have to top it, you know.
Yeah,
it's not a bike race. It's not a... yeah, I do. Oh, dear. The competitive
first
soul comes out. Here we go. Go.
The first part of my life before I moved to Willimantic, I lived in Coventry, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, I think, like really young, I was obsessed with bicycles. My bike as a kid with training wheels was a little bit too big for me. But my neighbors had the smaller bike, but it didn't have training wheels. And I must have been three because I moved out of that house when I was four.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just go to my neighbor's front yard because the bike was laying there and just try to ride it.
Yeah.
Over and over again, I would get maybe 10 feet and fall.
Yeah.
Or, you know, 5 feet and fall, 10 feet and fall. And finally, I figured out how to do it and was riding the bike and then went back to my house and had my dad take the training wheels off. And
nice.
I started riding. Yeah.
Great story. So love it. And you don't fall anymore, right? Sorry.
Well, not for my own doing.
Understood.
So, yeah.
Understood. Well, I'm going to relay a little story here, too, on Jeremy, too, because Jeremy was, I think you were my second employee at the bicycle shop. I was trying to figure this out as
second
to when.
Second or third.
Maybe the third. I know that Chris Lacey was first, and then I can't seem to pull anything together between you and Chris.
The other gentleman who became an engineer at the Calnago, what was
Danny Bowers.
Danny Bowers.
Was Danny before you?
He was before me.
Oh, so it was Danny Bowers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Danny's still living in the area. He lives up in Hebron. And he still rides his bike, rides to Pratt & Whitney and back in the day and still does. Hopefully he does. Anyway, wow, way cool. So when I met Jeremy, Jeremy was on four wheels, not two wheels. He was on a skateboard. And I used to sell skateboards at the bicycle shop. And you used to come down and hang out at the bike shop with your friend Jeff?
Yes. You actually offered Jeff the job first. And
did
he didn't
I really?
Take it. Yeah.
No kidding.
And I'm so psyched about it.
Always second choice. Yeah.
Well.
I was the second choice, yeah.
No,
it's good. It's good.
Oh, now that twists my story. Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
It doesn't really.
So anyway, Jeremy comes in. He's working in the bike shop, and, you know, he's starting to look at all these bicycles. He's getting fascinated, and I think we were selling Trek back then. I think we had Trek bicycles back then.
Yes,
that might have been your first.
And Peugeot, yeah.
And you were eyeing the bikes, and finally the decision was made that you wanted to buy your own bike, and you were watching the ride activity out of Rainbow Cycle, because we had a Monday night ride, we had a Wednesday night time trial, and then we had a Friday night ride. And the Friday night ride was a little more upbeat. That was with Dave Geisert and myself and a few other guys that were racing
bikes.
The fast
guys. Yeah,
the fast guys, right? And so, but it was an upbeat ride, and it was more of like an invite bike ride, because, you know, you don't want to invite the wrong person to a ride like that because somebody could get hurt.
And it definitely wasn't waiting.
There was no waiting involved.
There was no waiting
involved. It was definitely an upbeat ride.
This was a drop ride.
It was
Sort of. We didn't ever really like to drop anyone, but we paid attention to keeping the pace pretty steady.
Mm-hmm. It was consistently fast.
It was consistently fast. It was.
And it would get faster as it ended.
Like, yes, it would. So as we're going on this ride and we're going along, Jeremy said, I want to go on the ride. And I'm thinking, this is kind of like, you know, this might be a little over his head, but you know what? I give the guy credit for being,
I was 16, right?
He was 16. He didn't know. He had no idea what he was getting himself into. So we take him out on this ride, and consistently, Jeremy is like 20 feet off the back, you know. But he's not giving up. He's just like right there. And he would come back in, and then he would drift off again a little bit, and he'd come back in. And we get near the end of that ride, and I'm riding side by side with Dave Geisert, who is probably one of your cycling mentors,
yeah.
I would say. I would definitely put him in there.
And he was really at a height of his
Dave was racing
at that point. Yeah.
35 races a year at that time. He was actually
pretty
making enough money racing his bicycle to pay for all of his expenses in cycling.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, which is very, very hard to do, as you well know. And so Dave comes up to me, and he just runs up, runs right into me, you know, bumps right into me and thumps me with his elbow, and I look over and I go, what? And he goes, who's the kid? And that's my Jeremy story there.
Yeah.
Who's the kid? I said, that's Jeremy Brazil. He works for me. He's, you know, he's working at the bike shop. And he goes, he's got possibilities. And I said, work with him. He's yours. Yeah. Just he's your project. Go get him. And so Dave, I think at that point, you know, started taking you out on some rides privately. And then you were still going on the Friday night rides. And the next thing you know, you're racing your bike. And it's like, wow, this guy's got it. He's totally got it. Because you're very talented on your bike. So
when I can train.
When you can train, yeah. Well, you know.
Maybe. I don't know.
When you were 16, you had a little more time for that.
Yeah.
If I wasn't working you to death at the bike shop. But.
You weren't. You know, and it was one of those things that was a great opportunity because I was around bikes all the time. So it's like osmosis, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then I was still able to ride 4 hours a day.
Right.
Which you have to do. Like if you want to be
up in the top 10, you gotta be putting the miles in.
Yeah, and those were the days where the road races were long.
Yes, they were.
And there was a lot of them. So.
And we had road races.
Yeah.
And that was the other
season
thing.
Didn't end in effectively June.
Yeah.
We're right.
Looking at the schedule, we don't have much going on the next few weeks.
Yeah, I was looking at Bike Ridge today and before when I was preparing the show, and I'm looking and I'm going, where are all the races?
Yeah,
what happened?
And
you know, I went to the Nebra site, figured maybe there would be something there. Nothing.
No. And, you know, even the road races that you have are, even at the elite level, are a lot shorter. I mean, late 80s, early 90s, you could have a state road race that's 120 miles.
That's right.
Of climbing.
My first state road race is 107 miles.
Yeah, so
you know, and it was
just changed.
You know, you had to. It was great because when I did my first state road race, I was a lowly Category 4, and there were, you know, maybe a dozen of us in the race, and then at the end there was me. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of fun. But because I watched them all fall off. But I was training with a couple of Cat 2s, so you know, you learn. And then I was cooked by July.
I remember.
I had nothing left.
My first state road race was, I think, out towards Ledyard. It was like Voluntown or something.
The Voluntown one.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one that was off of Route 49 out in Voluntown.
I think so. And it
beautiful
had,
area. Sterling, Connecticut. And,
This subtle climb up to the finish.
Yeah.
I remember that as a junior. It was my first state road race as a junior. And I was sprinting in full cramps. Leg cramps in the sand, you know, on the side of the road because I couldn't hold a straight line. It was, I remember that. I'll still remember that, you know.
That's a great image.
Yeah, it was brutal.
It is. But you know, I mean, look where you are now. You've done really well with it.
I have. Yeah. I suppose, you know,
I give yourself some credit. You did really well with it.
You're still in it.
As a matter of fact, I think we took you to the Ledyard 5-person relay one year. And I think you got
mixed team.
On a mixed team. We love to go down there with two women in the boat because we could put two women on a 5-person team and blow away most of the men's teams.
Yeah. We were in the lead for a while.
Yeah, we were.
It was till the last leg that the men's team actually overtook us, right? We were second overall.
I think so. Yeah.
So
and I was the runner, I think, at that point. I was actually running.
Yeah. I set a course record that day.
You did. I remember. Mm-hmm. I remember. So, yeah, you got a little talent. Just a little bit. You know?
Well, you know, I quit for a long time, so you come back as a different person.
I understand.
You come back, the physique changes. Back then I was a time trialist and climber. Now I'm more of a crit and CX rider. But that was always a CX rider. But, you know, I think you just, time changes us all, right?
Right.
So I'm definitely not the same person I was back then.
It's a different landscape now, too. I mean, most of what we have in Connecticut in the region, we've got crits that, you know, roll through the spring, and then we've got cross.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like you said, we don't have any long road races or time trials anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's really a shame. I mean, when I was racing my bike, we had the Tour of the Valleys, which was this big thing up in Vermont. You know, you went over 3 major climbs. Mm-hmm. It was finished in an apple orchard on top of a hill. It was great. It was awesome. And just good stuff. The Stowe Road Race was around at that time. You went over Smuggler's Notch.
Right.
I loved that race.
And then there was Putney. And then there was the, what's the other one there?
There's a Greenfield
The one that
Road
goes
race.
Around the lake, Lake Sunapee.
Sunapee.
There's a big one up at Lake Sunapee, which is a lot of fun. That was still going on
up to a few years ago.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Some brutal climbs on that thing.
Yeah. That was a tough one. It was a circuit too, right?
Yep.
So and it had that uphill. I used to love those uphill finishes.
Oh,
like
me
any
too.
Any race where you could just, you know, hammer into the sprint on a hill was definitely something.
Well, it's the only place I could sprint was going uphill because sprinting on the flats was not something that was my forte.
Yeah, you could climb.
You look like you could probably sprint in the flats.
Is that a fat joke?
It was not a fat joke.
Yeah, I had
you have a thicker body than I have.
I am thick set. I had my I had my best success on the track.
Did you?
I quit. I raced as a junior in New Jersey, which is, you know, I started out as a time trialist just like you. And quit the sport when the club that I was part of really didn't support juniors anymore. I was one of two riders, and I got distracted. You know, got my driver's license and
that darn thing.
Yeah, and girls and playing in
Jersey
bands.
Shore.
Those darn things. Yeah.
Jersey Shore is very pretty.
And, you're hanging around with a Jersey girl, it's really distracting. Let me tell you.
You can actually swim in the water in New Jersey.
No, not right now. There's an advisory.
Oh, yeah. Because of sharks.
No.
Oh, what?
Sewage.
Oh,
really?
Oh, yeah.
That's terrible.
A couple of beaches. Yeah, I read it this morning.
Oh, no. Not all of the beaches or just a couple?
Some of them. The ones I like.
Oh, that's too bad.
I'm sad. I'm not going there, but, you know.
Which ones do you like?
Well, I grew up going to Sea Isle.
Yeah.
And because it was like a 35-minute shot from our house.
Right.
At the most.
So that's far south.
That's
not too far from Cape May.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's maybe 20 minutes up the road if you
take
the parkway.
Not far at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, I won't,
because
going down there to the end
of
the summer.
Much further north because I was from Heights on East Windsor.
Right.
So my favorite, I would go to Point Pleasant or I'd go to Island Beach State Park.
Oh, sure.
And Seaside.
Yeah, I loved going up to Barnegat when I was a kid.
That was
fun.
Right. And I went crabbing in the Barnegat. You know, you get stinky chicken backs and you put them in the water and you catch crabs. Yeah.
We should have a whole different show about New Jersey.
We could do that.
Yeah.
We could definitely do that.
Well, and then the Jersey Boardwalk. There's no boardwalks like the Jersey Boardwalks.
When we moved here, I asked my wife, I said, is there anything like Wildwood in Connecticut? And she was offended. She said, no,
exactly.
Not here.
Well, here's a funny story. So I took my sister to Westerly. So here's my sister. I'm going to take her to the beach. And she's like, yay, we're going to go to the beach in Connecticut. Oh, boy. So Nancy shows up and she's got a puka bead necklace on. And she's got a tie-dye purple shirt on because she's going to the beach.
Right.
And there's going to be a boardwalk. There's places to walk around in Westerly. And Nancy looked around when we got to Westerly and she saw people in their J. Jill and their L.L. Bean walking around and, you know, looking like New England. And she's like, instead of being embarrassed and saying, oh, I dressed wrong, she's like, why are these people dressed this way? Where's the tie-dyes? Where's the custard? Where's the boardwalk?
Yeah,
she thought it was funny that they were dressed like New England because the Jersey Shore is that.
Right.
Yeah.
Coarse custard, sausages with the peppers and the onions, and you've got to play skee ball and...
Oh, Snooki.
Longing for New Jersey. Mm. No, that's...
Saltwater taffy?
Yeah.
Snooki. So I don't relate to that.
We eat oysters at the beach in Connecticut.
Yeah. Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
I know.
And wines.
I know.
That whole Jersey Shore show, I don't really relate to that because that wasn't exactly my experience. But, I mean, the actual, you know, venues that they went to.
Mm. Yeah, I knew people like that in high school, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I moved.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So did you race at T-Town?
I did. Yeah. I got back into racing because I was a bike messenger in Philly.
Wow.
2 weeks into my freshman year in college, I was looking for a way to earn some money. And my sister's boyfriend at the time said, well, bike messengers come in and out of my office all the time. Why don't you just go and get a job doing that? You'll learn the city really quickly and you'll make a little bit of money. And I started looking around thinking, wow, these guys are actually pretty cool. And about 2 weeks in, I had a mountain bike. I replaced that with a track bike. And another person suggested that I start going to T-Town to race. If you're riding a track bike, go to a track.
You've got the legs for it.
Yeah.
If you're going to ride in Philly, you have to drink a lot of Wooter and get Rita's Wooter ice.
And eat Wooter ice.
That's right. Wooter ice.
Wooter ice.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
I spent a lot of time getting rid of that accent. It only comes out when I've had a couple of beers.
My sister still says Wooter. My sister lives in Florence, New Jersey, and that's like, you know, 20 minutes from Philly. She says Wooter.
Oh, she's in the epicenter of that accent.
Yeah.
She really is.
I got a speeding ticket there once. It was probably the worst
one. In Florence?
In Florence. There's the bridge that goes, or the bypass that goes from the New Jersey Turnpike to the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
That's right.
No,
yeah. That's right.
Yep.
My fastest official clock speed. So,
oh.
I have that on my record.
Well, that's nice.
Wait a minute. You got a speeding ticket on your bike?
No.
Oh.
No. No. I'm hoping for that one, though.
Right.
Yeah.
You look at the cop and you go, really?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. And they're like, are you crazy?
So anyway, Jeremy, you said something about an interruption in your cycling career, to speak. What's that all about? What happened?
We've talked about it a bit on our show.
Yeah, I've caught it. Yeah.
I think I quit I mean, that's all I could say.
It's
know,
a
22,
very...
23 years old. I don't know if you remember the situation at the time, but I ended up, I slept on some college dorm room floor because it was the only place I could sleep the night before Putney Road Race one season.
Okay.
And whoever the college students, they weren't being very nice. I don't think they really wanted me there.
Okay.
A cyclist who lived there let me sleep on the floor. So.
All right.
They left the window open. It's like pouring rain. Spring in Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't sleep, whatever. I raced the race the next day. It's in pouring rain, start to finish.
Mm-hmm.
The elite race there. So it was a long road race.
Oh, yeah.
And I ended up coming down with pneumonia.
Oh, no.
And so we had registered for the Tour of Adirondacks. And, you know, because there's a lot of stage races back then. We had registered for the Tour of Adirondacks, and I get sick. And I was actually riding and training with pneumonia for like, weeks. And I didn't realize it until I was in the state road race. I started getting leg cramps, and I was like, why am I getting leg cramps? I go to the doctor the next day. You got pneumonia in both your lungs, right?
Cause it's
it's that sign, you know, when you're at, like, 4% body fat as an athlete, you're borderline being sick.
Yeah, you're always on the edge, always.
Every sniffle could be something.
Right.
So the team I was on was a pretty good team, but they would only cover our entry fees if we finished the races.
Right.
So Tour Adirondacks, I don't know what it was. It was like $100-$150 maybe for that stage race.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a poor college student, right? So I didn't have the money. So I had just sent the check out. I call them. They're like, sorry, we're not going to refund it. I'm like, I'm a poor college student. I'm sick. I can't go. So they, I end up canceling the check because they won't. And then USA Cycling at the time was USCF.
Right. Remember
they suspend me.
Really?
Really?
So they suspend me because I can't. This is a really.
Because you canceled the check.
Because I canceled the check. And like. Back then, it would just send out, you know, notices that so-and-so was suspended.
Right.
They wouldn't give reasons for it. And yeah, there was, like, stuff going around, whatever. And I was, and I'm trying to heal.
Right.
I get back towards the end of the summer, and I try to race. I think it was, like, Naugatuck Criterium or something like that. And I just get dropped.
Yeah.
And I was so, like, jaded, and the pressure had been so high for so long, I quit.
Yeah.
I walked away from the bike at the end of that summer, and I didn't look at it again I bought a mountain bike in between, like maybe 6 or 7 years later, and started mountain biking a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I really didn't have a road bike or look at a road bike for 14, 15
years.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's serious.
Yeah.
I get it. I totally understand. You know, the bicycle, people don't understand the bicycle and how easily it can burn you out because one day you're riding at the top of your game and the next day it's like someone throws a switch and your body just goes, nope, not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
And it shuts down. And I would go through that every season when I was racing my bike. Mm-hmm. I would get a little deeper into the season every year, you know, I'd get a little bit further. But I remember we used to have a criterium in Hartford called the Traveler's Criterium.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right around Bushnell Park. And it was
stupid fast.
I mean, really stupid
fast.
And I remember going there and being signed up for it and gonna do this race, and I picked my bike up. And do you remember George Orr? Remember that name?
Of course.
Yeah. So George Orr had a thing that he would say, and he'd say in his British accent, he would say, and I'm not gonna do that. But anyway, he would say, you know, if you wake up in the morning, you pick your bike up, and it's really heavy, you should probably not ride it.
Right.
And that's where I was. I was at the point where I picked my bike up and it weighed like huffy heavy, you know, really, really
Huffy heavy.
We're talking really heavy.
I do that. You know, I pick up my bike. When I pick up my bike, I assess how I feel.
By how heavy your bike feels.
How heavy it is. And if my bike feels light, it's like, all right, I'm
we're going to have a good ride today.
Oh, I don't know. Yep. If it's heavy, I'm like, yeah.
Yep.
Those are back in the days when it was all on how you felt.
Right.
That's how you judged your training.
Well, we didn't know.
Racing by feel or training by feel.
What else did we have, really? I mean, we didn't even have heart rate monitors back then. We
but your heart, you can't always go by your heart rate because your heart rate
can
be high.
Well, I went by my heart rate because what I would do is I would check my pulse in the morning and when I was laying in bed, and if it was higher than normal, I said this was an easy day. And if it was back down to normal, then I knew I could have a hard training day, and that would be fine.
I've actually mentioned that recently. Like, that's really what it was. Yeah.
That's the way we did
it. Check your heart rate in the morning.
Check your heart rate in the morning. And that really told you what you could or should be doing that day. And then, you know, you also kind of sometimes have to go by, I just feel like I feel lousy, and I'm not going to do this.
I do not feel well.
I do not feel well.
Yes.
But anyway, I had that experience. I show up at the crit. I'm paid to go in. I got my number on my back and pump my tires up. I'm all set to go. And I'm getting ready. They're getting ready to call us to the line. And I looked down at my bike. I picked it up one more time, popped the air out of both tires, walked back to the car and said, "That's it. I'm done." And that was it for that rest of that summer. And then that's what got me into the whole cyclocross thing, because now I get back on my bike in August because I'm starting to feel okay again, because that's usually that was right around the 4th of July. Get back on my bike, start to feel pretty good again, and starting to get some miles in. I'm looking for road races. There's nothing. I'm looking for races in general. There's not much. It's really, you know, hit or miss.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm fit.
Yeah, right.
And my bicycle shop at the time is on the decline because it's winter. We're going into winter. I got nothing to do. So I started out racing cross before the bike shop, and then I decided to make what we now know as Mansfield Hollow State Park and the Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross.
Yeah, those were the first racing I ever, like non-BMX racing I ever did, was the cyclocross races at Mansfield Hollow.
At Mansfield Hollow.
And you would do it as a series, which was cool.
I did it as a four-week series, right. And I did it with Bill Sykes and Tom Stevens out in Massachusetts, and we would overlap, you know, we'd go back and forth so we didn't step on each other's races, and all of a sudden we had nine races.
Yeah, it was great.
There we go.
And then also the New England Championships, they would do that.
Right.
Usually out in
Carver High School.
Right.
Yep.
Plymouth, right?
Plymouth, yeah. Exactly.
I won that.
Would you ever go back?
Yeah, of course, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would you ever go back to doing a series more than just a standalone race?
If I had a tremendous amount of help and some financial support, yes. Mm. But otherwise, no.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. One is a lot of work. And I, you know, I know people love Mansfield Hollow. I know it there's a cult-like following to it. And I get that. I understand. You know, it's really the roots of New England Cross, and we have roots.
I was with a couple of guys from Stage One Airline last night, and we were talking about Mansfield.
Oh, really?
And how people have some people have a love-hate relationship with the course. If you're a really good technical rider, it's an excellent course for you.
It's the one.
Yeah.
It really is. It's not easy. The thing about cross is there are a number of cross races that are out there. I will not mention any names or locations like Massachusetts. But there are a lot of them that can be really flat.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a chance to catch, you know, to get your body back during some of the hard sections. And Mansfield never allows you to do that.
No, there's no recovery.
Even on the flat sections, it's not easy.
There are no flat sections. It's all even on the backside of the course. Once you go over that log or whatever that is, you're on the bars the whole time.
Right.
You've got to look 100 feet in front of you because it's so twisty back there.
Oh,
there's some. If you know how to ride your bike on that course, you can recover.
Yeah.
Because you recover in the technical sections.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. But if you're not a technical rider,
you can't
do that. Yeah. So that's why I love Mansfield Hollow. Wade Summers said it best.
Yeah.
He said that Mansfield Hollow is the most fair cyclocross race in New England.
That's true.
Because nobody goes there with an advantage.
That's true.
You're either technical and really good, and you can handle that stuff, or if you're not that person, you're usually struggling on the flats, and you get someone that can, like, roll it out. Like, I'll bet you could roll it out on the flats.
I only make up my time past the start-finish line, and I do struggle a bit on the backside.
Mm-hmm.
There are parts of that course that I love.
Yeah.
There are parts that are so flowy. And I like where you put the barriers because I can really
like
whip around.
It's like surfing in a couple areas.
Yeah, it really
it's like
is.
Surfing on a bicycle.
Yeah,
you actually enjoy it because I mean, just catching air and like launching off of certain.
Oh, so much
just
fun!
Just like the way that you now have it crisscrossing on the little hillside.
Mm. Yeah.
Those are really, really fun technical fast sections that you can just rip if you know how to ride a bike. And that makes it enjoyable. Like, even though you're suffering and your eyes are in your back of your head for most of that course.
Right, yeah.
Like, that makes it all worthwhile. Like, you know, coming down that step off the dirt road and just launching because it's just a drop off.
Oh, like, yeah.
You know, I still have photos of me racing cross there in the 80s launching at the exact same spots, you know, which is like really cool.
You know, I launched that one time and not on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So I launched and my bike started to pitch down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was that's one of those spots where it's the ooh-ah spot. Ooh-ah spot because people spectate there. Mm-hmm. It's pretty popular. And I could hear the ooze as the front end of my bike was diving down. And I'm thinking, this is not going to end well.
Yeah.
So I clamped the rear brake on my bike, and it stopped the revolution of the rear wheel, and the rear wheel just went bang, bang, bang. And it just bounced off the ground and brought it back into control, and I brought it down, and then I heard the ah afterwards.
Instead of the no.
And instead of the, oh, are you all right?
I have a quick Ron story. I don't know if you remember this happening. But it was back when, so everybody ran Chinelli bars. I don't know which ones you were on. I always ran 66s.
I ran 66s. I don't know why. Sure I have nowhere near that kind of flexibility to do that. But
yeah,
I
probably learned it from you.
You probably did.
I remember I would ride 66-42s. So it was, you had to drill bars out back then?
Yeah.
To run the internal cables?
I think I know where you're
so
going.
We're going up a climb. It's a steep little climb in one of, like, I think it was like the Scotland Loop that looked like out through Chaplin and stuff.
I think you're right.
And we're going up, I forget the name of the road. It was towards East Hampton Center, I think, somewhere around there or just after it.
All right.
And we're going up this climb, and Ron is out of the saddle, and he's like a really good climber. Back then, he was like in the spin gear of probably a 4221.
Yep, that's right. Yep.
Right. So he's out of the saddle. He's climbing just next to me, and all of a sudden, pop! One half of his handlebars snaps in half, and his arm goes. He's out of the saddle, and his arm goes like way up in the air. He held it though.
I held it.
He didn't fall.
I did hold it. I don't know how I held that. But I held that.
And then, of course, we had to ride all the way back with you, only having your one half of your bars attached to the bike.
And I triaged it. Remember, I put a stick inside
the
bar.
That's right. You
and
stuffed
I unwrapped
the stick
my
in
handlebar
it.
Tape, and I put some more sticks around the outside of that, and I used the bar tape and wrapped that around so I could at least have it there because I didn't have a brake otherwise.
Right.
So I at least had the capability to use my brake lever, but I just rode on one side on the way back. But I can't believe you remember that story. That's a great story.
And this can segue into my comment on checking tires.
Okay, right. We talked about that earlier.
All right,
sure.
So last Friday night was the Kermesse in East Hartford. Mm-hmm. Awesome race. It was super technical this year. It used to be technical when they started it because of construction. It changed for a while, and then they brought that back, but they extended it. So you're coming into these tight corners, really, really narrow bike path sections that kind of like shift back and forth. Beautiful course, but highly technical.
Mm-hmm.
We're sitting at the line. I look down. I'm on the front of the line. I look down. There's a there's a nail head sticking out of my tire. And the craziest thing of it is, like, I thought I had, for the last four races in warm up, I thought I was having valve noise. And everybody's like, "Why is your bike ticking?"
It was the head of the nail.
So I had been racing crits on this tire for three or four races. It's back to Nintegrit.
Back to Nintegrit. I made fun of you. We're riding around the course. Like, Jeremy, your bike's making noise again.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. I think it's glue.
Yeah, it's something.
So do you seal it inside your tire?
I do, but it was holding air. It was fine. It was like, it was probably sealed in there, but it's this nail head.
Oh, my God.
And so there's 2 minutes to the start. I'm like, I don't have spare wheels, and I wanted to race really, really bad. And Dave Geisert goes, "I've got spare wheels over there in the pit." And he goes with me. We put his wheel on. We get to the line. I look down, and I have got a new kind of modern Trek that doesn't have – it's not easy to adjust the brake, and I'm still on calibers. So
good for you.
Say that.
The biggest disc around.
I'm not on discs yet on the road.
Sorry, I have an opinion here. If you hadn't noticed.
Let's explore that soon.
I squeeze the front brake, and I'm a front breaker. You know, I love the front brake.
That's where the power is.
You got to, you know, you just feather it, right?
Right.
You shouldn't be using brakes and crits, but let's just
Yeah, well, brakes are highly overrated. All they do is slow you down.
Right. So I squeezed the front brake just to see, because it's like a really old aluminum wheel that Dave gave me, which, thank you, Dave. That was really awesome of you to do that. But it's not as wide as my carbon wheels. And the brake pads aren't even making contact with the rim. Like, they're like full pressing the lever, not even making contact.
Wow. I thought you were joking when... So he comes back to the I'm right behind him in the lineup, and he says, "Well, I have no brake," and I thought he was joking.
Right?
Wow.
I only had a back brake that whole race.
Oh,
yeah.
That's not good.
No, so I wouldn't advise doing that if you don't really know how to ride a bicycle. Because there was even a moment with me where I grabbed a handful of rear brake through some of the technical bike pass section, and I drifted.
Yeah.
Because I'm used to the balance braking.
Yeah.
Right.
So then I just was like, "All right." From this point forward, I'm keeping my hands away from the brake levers.
Just open a gap to get through that one technical turn?
I would just brake way ahead of time, the 180.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it,
You want to hear some irony? I made fun of him for having that tack in his tire, and I flatted two laps into that race. That was my day.
Irony is pretty ironic.
That's what I get.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Never make fun of your friends.
Yeah, I know.
Right. Mm. Yeah.
Such is life.
Yeah, well, you know,
don't talk flats and crashes.
That's right. No. But you know what? You were relaying a story to me out in the lobby before you guys came in here, and I said something about hating to hear that sound, that bite, because I overheard you guys talking about a crash, and I said I hate to hear that sound, and you told me that the sound is different now.
Yeah, it's not. Bike racing has changed, you know, for sure, since when you were racing.
Oh, yeah.
We're not on steel
bikes. A lot
of
things have changed since when I was racing.
I mean, we're not on steel bikes anymore.
Yeah.
So when a crash happens, there's very little metal hitting the ground. When we first started this stuff, it was that screeching metal on pavement sound that would happen. Ugh. That was like, it was like banshee yelling.
I know.
Right, yeah. Now it's pops, you know? It's like that hollow carbon sound that you hear, and it can be really loud, and it's usually combined with blown out tires. But just like the carbon wheels and the frames, they just make these, and especially if somebody's on deep dish wheels, it just
The smell is different.
The smells, well, you have the smell of
in the
carbon
crash
brake pads.
The smell is different.
The carbon brake pads have a different smell.
Oh, okay.
So when you're coming into a tight turn and riders are braking hard,
it's
almost like the way the air smells before it rains. You can feel that crash coming.
The ozone. Like ozone?
The ozone.
Yeah.
That's on a deeper level than I've ever thought of it. I just hear it. But it's a scary sound. Like, you can know how bad it is even if you don't see it. You know,
by the level of the volume of the crash or
For sure.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Well, crashing, we should not crash. I mean, but, it happens. I mean, it's part of the sport.
It's increasing.
Do you think?
Well, bike crashes have always been a part of the sport.
They are.
I've always, depending on how many races you do in a season, you're going to have one a season. If you're a competitive bike racer, you're going to have one a season to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
You have to accept that. Mm-hmm. Or if you can't, you're actually only going to be dangerous to others, you know, if you're timid.
Right.
Because
right.
I think that's what happens if you're not used to riding at high speeds in close quarters, elbow to elbow, with other riders. If you've got nervous energy already, it's only going to get worse when somebody bumps into you. You should be able to bump into somebody pretty hard in a bike race, and both of you are supple, and you just go your
ways.
Bounce
off, you know? You just elbow
out. Well, those skills.
It's easy, but it's easy when you know how to do it.
But nobody's riding and training in packs anymore.
I was just
going to
ask, what do you think this is all about? Why is this happening like this?
So what happens is people smash into each other. They're not protecting the front wheel, whatever it is, and they tense up.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you were told not to do or taught, everything that you taught me as a 16-year-old, or Dave taught me when I was 16, isn't being taught. So people are just very, very rigid, but they're fast. You know, the bikes have gotten faster. You can train more effectively. More people have access to training plans and intensity training. So I think they're not learning the art of riding a bike.
Well,
I'm riding with other people,
and people are
zwifting and roofing. I can't believe how many people are like, they're zwifting in June.
Yeah,
and I'm like, why aren't you on the road?
Well, it's still useful for training. If you have limited time, if you've got a busy schedule, Zwift might be the only way you're going to get your intervals in or even just your riding.
Well, you get the focus.
That's true.
I taught a spin class this morning. It's not a spin class. It's a cycling class, but we do it on spin bikes. But I taught a class this morning. I teach 3 days a week.
In the summer.
In the summer.
Yeah.
In the summer. Part of the season.
Yeah.
I think to your point, it's mostly masters riders because I know from my work with the CCAP as a coach, we're teaching kids how to bump and how to have close contact and how to ride shoulder to shoulder. And that's we're seeing our kids come up as really great bike handlers. But those skills aren't necessarily being absorbed or being taught to masters riders. We have riders that are coming into the sport with a high level of fitness and they're not getting that specific training, which is really necessary.
Late entries to the sport.
And I'm going to add something to that, too. Do you know what they call an old runner? A cyclist. Okay? We're getting all this running crowd that they have the blown out knees, they've got the bad hips, they've got all the stuff, but they have the ability to go out and work out at a high intensity level because they know how to do it. They're just their bodies won't let them do it anymore, so they get on a bike. Mm-hmm. And we see this with our local bike club. And we have all these people that used to run, and now they're on bikes.
Yeah.
And so they're fit, and they're fast, and they're strong, but their handling skills are just
And try
bad.
To teach them anything.
And they won't listen to
they
you
but
because
to
I'm not that,
that
fast anymore. But you see, when I was...
We used to go through that when I was first getting into it, and I was riding with you a lot. We always had those kind of gym rats that were trying to ride bikes.
Oh, yeah.
And no offense to people who've been to the gym a lot.
And we had Jim Henry.
Yeah, and we had Jim Henry, yeah.
Well, he was a special case all his own.
Yeah, he was.
He was.
We could have a whole show
episode
on
Jim Henry. Yeah.
I would like to do that sometime, actually.
Right.
That would be fun.
Let's do that. But, you know, back to what we were discussing around masters coming into the sport. Lee, and you're right. It is something going on with the masters field. I don't necessarily know why, because it used to be we were the experienced guys.
Right.
We were the former Cat Ones, former pros, former fast guys that are just staying with the sport.
Right.
And now it's like, all right, so it's only June. I have been taken down once already. I have almost been taken down in the finish sprint at Stafford by another rider. And, you know, we're only a few races in. And my teammate, Stan, who went down in this crash we described at the Kermes, that's his second crash of the season, and he is an amazing bike rider.
Right.
Yeah.
So that first crash
was in Hatfield.
Yeah, him and I both went down in the same, and it was the same type of thing. Two guys bumped into each other, freaked out, hit the ground.
And that crash was ridiculous.
We had nowhere to go because it was right across the road.
Right, and there you are. Yeah, you're caught in the epicenter of the whole thing. And there's no way out.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking for exit plans, and you can't find them. And now you're part of it.
Yeah.
And that's it. And
so
it's tough.
That's what's happening.
So here's my thing. I have people that still to this day actually do come to me and say, hey, Ron, I'm thinking of racing my bike.
Mm-hmm.
What would you recommend? You know what I recommend? Race cross for a season.
Yeah,
before you get out on the road, I want you to race cross. And you go, no, I don't want to do that. I want to race my bike on the road. And I go, no. Do cross.
Yeah.
And they'll go, why? And I said, because you'll become a better bike handler. Mm-hmm. You're going to learn the skills that are necessary to get you out of a situation when you're in a situation. Or you're going to learn how to not freak out when you're in a situation. Because cross, I mean, there's a situation... You know, every 10 pedal strokes.
Right, yeah.
and your brain gets programmed into understanding what I have to do to control this bike that is not necessarily in control. So I'm a huge believer in cross, especially with kids, when you're training kids. And look what's happened with CCAP and the cyclocross series. Check that out. I mean, we have kids. I used to have three kids show up to a juniors race.
Mm-hmm.
Remember back in the day? You were probably one of them.
I was one of them.
Right.
For sure.
Three kids go up to a junior race. Now I've got 65 to 70 kids show up to a junior's race. This is like, I you have no idea how much this warms my heart when I see this, because this to me is like, this is the future.
Yeah,
and this is what I have always dreamed of happening.
Oh, yeah. And those kids are going to drill it straight into November with the last race of the series. So they're sticking with it. This is their fall sport.
Yeah.
I would add a couple things to that, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I think another thing I would say is get on a mountain bike a lot.
Hmm.
Like ride mountain bike trails a lot, because it's a heavier bike. You really have to know how to corner and have quick reaction speed, because being a good bike racer, a big part of it is how fast your reaction speed.
Absolutely.
So you can avoid a crash or just that instinct. And yeah. like that type of mountain biking helps with that. Another thing I would say is go on at least one group ride a week.
Please.
Please go on one yeah. group ride.
And listen.
And listen. Do yeah. two things. Listen and stay in the group.
Yeah.
Right.
Midfield, right. back of the field, not the front. Don't no. try to drop people on hills. Don't try to
impress them.
Don't try to impress because nobody's impressed. Because it's
this.
A group ride.
I love this.
Just go
great.
And be elbow to elbow to people because you get mm-hmm. comfortable around other riders and realize that when they're comfortable, you're comfortable. When you move, they're going to move. And because, you know, it's like like riding a wave, man. It's like a serpent, right?
You yeah, know? It is. And, you know, I'm not riding fast anymore, but Fran will tell you this. I go up to people if I see someone who's starting to show talent enough so that I can trust that talent,
right.
you know what I'm talking about,
yeah, of
right?
course. Mm-hmm.
I go up to them, I put my arm around them.
Yeah.
And I ride right alongside them. And when they first do it, they like look over at me and they go, drop your elbows, drop your mm-hmm. shoulders, relax. I will not take you down. Will you just hold your line and let's do this. Yeah. And I'll just ride with them for a little while. Yeah. And they'll go, you know, this makes me kind of nervous. I said, good. I said, the day it doesn't, then we've made it. We've mm-hmm. accomplished
right, sure.
something here. Mm-hmm. But I said, I only chose you because I think you can do this. And that's what I do.
That's great for their confidence.
And you got to mentor them one at a time. You got to bring them in and you got to show them what it's like to do that. Because, you know, hand to hand, shoulder to shoulder, elbow to elbow, that should not even begin to freak you out.
Yeah, we should be able to wiggle our fingers against each other while we're
right.
riding.
Right.
The other thing is, you know, people freak out if you touch wheels. I can buzz somebody's back wheel all day long in a bike race.
Turn into it, not away
I
from
I can
it.
Actually
Simple.
Just zzz, zzz,
yep.
like it doesn't, you know, because you know how to adjust your weight on the bike. So
right.
when you hit somebody's, a lot of people do that, tense up, hit the ground.
Well, the first thing they do is they try to turn away from it.
Yeah,
and when the second you try to turn away from it, you're on the ground.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. You can rub wheels all the time if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But, you know, we brought up Dave Geisert multiple times, but one of the things that he used to do was put me in the gutter and stick his elbow to my elbow. And we would ride 3 hours like that and
yep.
never disconnect elbows. We would even
yep.
do it at the front of the group rides, and we would set the pace for the entire ride.
Dave and I used to do that, too, and people would freak out behind us and go, whoa, you guys, what are you doing? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. And Dave would look over and go, what's with the weenies behind us? That was a Dave weenie. He used to call everybody a weenie. So what's with the weenies behind us? They said, they're not used to this. Don't worry about it. We'll
right.
be fine.
Right.
And they would come up to us that Friday night ride. It was always that Friday night ride. They'd come up to us after us and go, how do you guys do that?
Yeah.
I said, well, we'll show you.
You
if
do
you
it.
You learn. You just keep doing it until you get it, and that's it.
We need more guys like you, Ron.
Oh. You know, no, you don't. No, you don't. But you know, I mean, it's one of the big things that I talk about on the show, and we're going to have to bring this up to a close here, unfortunately, but we'll get to that in a second, is give back to the sport you love so much.
Absolutely.
You know, one person at a time, I don't care how you do it, but give back to the sport you love. Obviously, you're coaching, so you're doing something there, Jed, so I get that. That's cool. You know, these conversations are so important. They really are.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and this is what we want to really do. You know?
Yeah, and that's good. That's great. I feel really, really good right now because I got you into cycling, and look where you are today, and it's really cool. And I haven't even touched base on some of the other things I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about Team 26 and all. We'll
have to come back.
Yeah, we'll have to come back.
Or you come on our show.
Oh, I would like to do that too. That would be great. That would be awesome. But I'm going to have to sign off on you guys, unfortunately. So my special guests here today were Jed Kornbluh and Jeremy Brazil, creators of the cycling podcast, Marginal Groans. You guys got to listen to these guys. If you liked what you heard today, listen more and tag them and like them and go on. You're on Facebook, right? You guys are on Facebook too, or you're not? Or you just
we're on Instagram.
Instagram webpage. I know I'm so old school. I understand.
We haven't done a lot around that, but you can find us on iTunes or any of the other streaming
but
services.
These guys are great, and they get to go to our rating when they talk on their podcast, and we're not doing it here. And you guys were awesome today for not going that way. I do appreciate appreciate
a lot
that.
Of restraint.
But anyway, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. We'll listen to your podcast. I'd love to come on your podcast sometime.
We'll
it would be a lot
up.
Of fun.
Yeah, let's do
and,
it.
And I want you guys back because we just scratched the surface here. We could have a lot of fun with
oh,
this.
Sure.
Oh, sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
Thank
awesome.
You.
Thank
all
you
right.
so much.
All right, cool. I'm going to go on to events here real quick, and we got to wrap this thing up. If you're interested in knowing a little bit more about bicycle racing, hey, check it out. You can go to nebra.us online. That would be the New England Bicycle Racing Association website. Check that out. You can go to bikereg.com and click on the calendar page. There's all sorts of stuff on there, although the schedule is a little blank right now, but you can find other cycling events that you might want to do too at the same time. The Tuesday night series in Hartford, big time, still going on, Rensselaer Field. You want to learn how to race a bike? There's where you go to learn how to race a bike.
If you can race us.
There. You can. Yes.
That's right.
Yes, absolutely. And let me tell you, you are going to be hanging on for dear life. These guys are not slow. They're fast. But, you know, I used to send people to the training races. I don't know if I ever did this with you, but I would send them to the training races and say, here's what I want you to do this week. I want you to sit in the back of the pack, mm-hmm. and I want you to fall off 20 yards, and then I want you to time trial yourself back in. And I want you to do that until you can't anymore.
That's like every Tuesday night for me in the area.
So I doubt that very much. Anyway, a few other things that are coming up on the calendar. Going to bikewalk.org, the Discover Connecticut Bicycle Tours, Falls Village this weekend, June 23rd in Falls Village, Connecticut. Beautiful out there. Get to know a little more about that part of the state way over there in the northwestern corner. Registration is open. You can find the information on bikewalkct.org. The League of American Cyclists instructor seminar, which is coming up on July 19th and through July 21st, brought to you by the Center for Latino Progress in Hartford, and a great way to learn a little bit more about how to teach people how to ride bikes. Cool thing. George Street Challenge for Major Taylor, Worcester Hill Climb set for July 28th. It's like you can almost see from here to there how long it is. Very, very short. Super steep. It's where the infamous Major Taylor used to train back in the 1890s. It's kind of a cool event. Also, same day, 2019 Thread City Century Ride, Sunday, July 28th, 2019. And that is all-star rides. We'll start and finish at Garrison Park in Chaplin, Connecticut. If you want to learn about all these beautiful roads that we talk about and ride on all the time out here, there is a 43, a 66, an 84, and a 102-mile ride. If you need to know more about it, threadcitycyclers.com.
And I'm the rest stop coordinator, so you'll see me probably at a rest stop.
And yes, you will. And Fran always does interesting things to the rest stops, so that's kind of nice. Last on my list here, I'm going to run through the Steeplechase Bike Tour. That's steeplechasebiketour.org. It is an event, well, I think we're in our 28th year now. Not sure if I got that right, but anyway, there's a 100-mile ride, a 62.5-mile ride, a 50-mile ride, a 35-mile ride, a 20-mile ride, and a 5-mile walk. It's all a fundraiser for local charities here in the area, and the money does stay within this area, which is very, very nice. Again, special thanks to Jed Kornbluh and Jeremy Brazil, creators of cycling podcast Marginal Groans. Check them out. My name is Pedalin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host Fran Storch,
yep.
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast, you'd like to comment, you can send me an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org. or on iTunes. If you've got a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or even be on the show live as a guest, cool thing, email bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs.